Coming up on today's episode of the Locked On Bucks podcast, we are joined by Carmen Vitale to talk a little Bucks and Saints.
Guys, do you remember the days when you were always ready to go? Now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Listen up. Blue Chew, that's blue like the color blue. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach, and since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as the pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Now, this isn't just for guys who can't perform. It's for any guy who wants that extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. For instance, you know, a lot of guys talk a big game, but if you're a one-and-done kind of guy, Blue Chew can even help you get to round number two. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor's visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than the pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for all our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when using our special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay the $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON, to try Blue Chew for free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast.
You are Locked On Buccaneers, your daily Tampa Bay Buccaneers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Forfeit the game before somebody else takes you out of the frame. Put your name to shame, cover up your face. You can't run the race, the pace is too fast, you just won't last.
What's up and welcome back to the Locked On Bucks podcast. I'm James Yarko, joined as always by David Harrison. You can find everything that we're doing over at BucksNation.com. Make sure you follow along on Twitter at LockedOnBucks, at JYarko_Bucks, at DH82_Bucks, and at Bucks_Nation. Today's episode brought to you in part by Away. Away creates thoughtful products designed to change how you see the world. For $20 off a suitcase, visit awaytravel.com/LockedOn and use promo code LockedOn during checkout. We are joined by someone who told me just a few moments ago that she has changed her college football allegiance to the University of Illinois because they are red hot and she wants to stick it to Scott Smith from Buccaneers.com, Carmen Vitale. Carmen, how you doing?
I'm doing well, but that doesn't really work because Scott and I share an alma mater in Northwestern. So
that's true.
As much as you could say that would pin me against Scott, that would pin me against my own collegiate, well, grad school experience. I did grow up liking the Illini. I have somewhere in like the depths of my closet, and I do mean depths, there is a old school Chief Illiniwek sweatshirt from the early 90s.
I love that logo. Yeah, and when I was, I obviously didn't prepare a crazy intro like I normally do, but all I associated was Arizona State.
Right.
I completely forgot about Northwestern. Yeah. My apologies.
Not really, like, it's okay. I legitimize myself with Northwestern, I feel like. That's not true. Arizona State has a really great journalism program, and they're a great school. But when I tell people the two schools that I went to, they're like, oh, those are not the same. No. They're not.
All right. Well, before we dive into this weekend's game, of course, we have to ask you about the hot topic of the week. And that is, of course, the release of Vernon Hargraves. Do you have any thoughts on kind of how that came about or, you know, were you personally surprised at all to hear that it happened on, what was that, Tuesday?
I don't necessarily know that I would use the word surprised because I think that this coaching staff especially has shown that when they say something, they mean it. And it was one of those things where, you know, you're just not getting what you need out of a player. And it was a cumulative effect. And Bruce Arians said as much. He didn't provide a lot of elaboration when he was asked about it this week, but he did say that, you know, it was a cumulative thing. It's not like, you know, it's that one play in the game against Arizona, you know, was the straw even that broke Campbell's back. It was just kind of a cumulative effect of what they'd seen and what I think more importantly, what they hadn't seen, which was enough growth or enough effort or enough whatever, you know, whatever it was. I'm not going to speak for them, but yeah, so it was one of those things where, and I think there's such a stark contrast too, because the rookies that have come in are like, they really do. They have such a good attitude about everything. They work really, really hard. They give absolutely everything they have on every down of practice, game, like whatever it is. And that shows. So, you know, when you're not giving 100%, you could be giving 80%, 90%, in practice, but these rookies are going to show you up because that's how hard they work. So I think that that contrast was a little bit more evident than they would have wanted it to be. And that was that.
I agree with everything that Carmen said, and I disagree with everything that James said.
Okay, that worked.
James didn't say anything.
Doesn't matter. I just disagree.
Anyway, let's go ahead and dive into this weekend's game. And we all remember how the last matchup went. Basically, Michael Thomas roasted this team, roasted the secondary. We're dealing with a new look secondary now since the first time these two teams faced, and there's going to be a heavy reliance on two rookies, you know, to shut down this Saints passing offense. How do you feel? Well, let me preface it with this. We saw the drastic difference in Jamel Dean being thrust into a starting role 15 minutes before kickoff versus Jamel Dean preparing all week to be a starter. How do you think that a secondary of Jamel Dean and Sean Murphy Bunting is going to stack up against a prolific passer in Drew Brees and the NFL's leading receiver in Michael Thomas?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be a tough task, but I think that, especially with Jamel, like going through what he went through in Seattle, being thrown into something, you know, very last minute without any reps, essentially, to get him ready for that against another one of the league's best quarterbacks in Russell Wilson. And, you know, he survived it. Like, he made some good plays, too. They obviously get overshadowed by, you know, some more of the mistakes that he made. But once you get past something like that, though, and then especially, like, being able to bounce back, like, that only builds your confidence more and more. So I think that these guys have a lot of confidence, and I think that also has to do with the scheme that they're playing in and how much they know that their coaches believe in them. And, I mean, cutting Vernon when they did, they couldn't have done it. They wouldn't have done it if they didn't have confidence in these guys, and I don't think that's lost on them either. So mostly I think it's about confidence, and I think that they have a great amount of it. Now, I mean, Brees and Thomas are going to be a tough matchup for a rookie or for, you know, a 5, 6, 7 year vet in this league. It doesn't matter. So I think that you kind of have to take the rookie part out of it because it's just going to be a challenge, plain and simple. And, but it's not just Sean and it's not just Jamel that are going to go up against these guys. They've got a whole bunch of guys, including guys like Levante David, and, you know, guys up front that are going to do everything they can to help them out in the you know, respective ways that they can too. So they're not just going to be on an island with Michael Thomas with no help. At least I don't think that that's what they're going to end up doing. So we saw that, you know, I feel like in New Orleans, you know, the scheme was a lot more man heavy, where you did kind of get those, you know, basically just, hey, mano y mano, let's go. And I think that, you know, you're going to have to try and attack them a little bit of a different way because clearly that didn't work out so well.
Right. And I think that given the situation the Buccaneers find themselves in, obviously with young corners, I was happy to hear that Carlton Davis returned to practice today, even in a limited fashion, because I think that lends the possibility and likelihood that he'll play on Sunday because getting him back is huge. But that front seven is fully aware of what's going on in that secondary. Obviously, they're all in the same locker room. They live this life that we talk about. I know you're in the building, so you kind of live it with them, Carmen. But those of us out here, we are just watching it and observing and commenting about it. They're living it. So if we're aware of how young this secondary just got, even younger than they already were, how inexperienced secondary just got. They are aware of it, and they're aware of their role as pass rushers, disruptors to the secondary, and help their buddies out in this situation. So I feel like as much as your Jamel Deans and your Carlton Davises are going to come into this game uber, you know, enthused and all that, I feel like your JPPs and your Ndamukong Suhs and your Shaq Barretts are going to do the same. But Carmen, my question, and I posed this question to Evan yesterday on the episode with me, and I wanted to kind of pose this without getting too deep into predictions so that James doesn't fire me. How many points do you – what's the floor for the Saints? Like, this Buccaneers of defense, obviously the Saints have a really good offense for a reason. Drew Brees is a Hall of Fame quarterback. This secondary is young. The pass rush isn't going to make it home every single snap. What do you think – if you had to put a floor on this, the fewest points I could see the Buccaneers defense holding the Saints offense to, what is that number?
Here's the thing is that the Saints are really efficient, but they're like, I forget what the exact number is. I was just looking at it today and I should have remembered, but as far as scoring goes, like they don't have like a crate, like it's not like they're top five in the league in scoring. They're very efficient in what they do, especially now because their defense is so good. So they don't need to score a lot of points, and that is definitely part of it, I'm sure. But I'm not thinking that like they're gonna like run up the score, you know, to the point where we're gonna have like a shootout like we did in LA, in order to have to win this thing. So I don't know. I mean, the floor, I would go like, can I set like an over under like 16.5?
Yeah, we can do it like that. But I mean, just talking about that, the Saints have scored fewer than 15 points in four games this year so far. They won two of those. They also lost two of those. So, I mean, this is an offense that can be bottled up. And we're not talking about, like, prolific defenses. Like, the Dallas Cowboys have some good pieces, you know, Jalen Smith and all that stuff. But they're not the 85 Bears Chicago, you know, defense by any means. So, if they can keep the Saints defense to 12 points through scheme and pass rush and all that stuff, I mean, the Buccaneers defense can do it as well, I feel like.
Oh, absolutely. And I agree with that 100%. And that's, you know, what I kind of took a roundabout way of saying. But it's, yeah, it's just one of those things where they have the defense to complement that offense. So that offense, it doesn't rest on the offense anymore. Whereas the Saints teams of the past have relied on Brees essentially going off and scoring a bunch of points so that, you know, you take our game last year, you know, that was the first game of the season that we won against them when they came in, in their house, like that score was insane. I think it was like 40 to whatever it was. I don't remember what it was, but there was a ton of points scored. But that's not the Saints team you're seeing this year. You're seeing a very well balanced team and with the defense, like really stepping up because that front seven is extremely aggressive. So they're getting to the quarterback and they're preventing you from scoring points, more than you can prevent them.
All right. Well, are we ready to start jumping into our predictions for this game?
Sure.
David, are you?
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm here and I'm ready to go.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and start off with our predictive offensive players of the game. Carmen, who is going to be the hero on offense in this one?
That's tough. I think it's going to be Mike Evans, and because I think that he's going to go off like for like 180 yards, like we've seen him do a couple of times. But I do think that he'll get the 76 that he needs to get to 1,000 yards this season. And doing that, he'll obviously join the company of just Randy Moss, is the only players in the league to ever start their careers with six consecutive 1,000-yard seasons. So that will just kind of like, that milestone will kind of outshine everything. And I mean, I think that being weary of what happened last game where he was held without a catch, he's downplayed it. Byron Leftwich downplayed it. But like, you want to like, you like, you want to go off a little bit. Plus, Marshawn Lattimore doesn't look like he's going to play. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Good luck trying to contain Mike Evans without Marshawn Lattimore. That's all I'm saying.
And it's even more impressive that if you think about the previous Saints game, Mike Evans, zero catches. And the first 2 weeks of the season, he had, well, it was like 84 yards in the two games combined, and he's still about to end up with 1,000 on the season in game number 10. Like, that's wild. He's so good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I just wrote this today, 400-something. In the last three games, he's had like 400 yards, receiving yards. And I'm like, what?
And yet, Chris Godwin is also still in the top five.
It's like, also still going off. Like, yeah. I wrote a whole article about this because everyone was like, no, Chris Godwin can't have 100 catches with Mike Evans on the team. And I'm like, and literally all of them just said, here, hold my beer. And there you go.
So you looked at all those people and you just said, okay, boomer. All right, David, who is your predictive offensive player of the game?
It's Ronald Jones. So seeing him get the work that he got in the screen game this last weekend was beautiful. The running, the numbers obviously weren't so great in the running game, but I feel like if they can get that screen game going, I mean, the Saints are going to be aware of it either way, that it's a threat. And I think that kind of like there was that lull sort of, I think it was like late first quarter, early second quarter, where it kind of looked to me like Byron was almost waiting for Vance Joseph to bring his defense up and try to combat that screen a little bit. And it really didn't happen. Vance Joseph never really seemed to bite on selling out to defend those screens. And had he made that adjustment on the Cardinals defense, then I think that the running game probably would have done a little bit better. With Sean Payton, I mean, I don't know, obviously, their defense coordinator, but I think that with Sean Payton and his mentality just as a head coach and how it trickles down through the rest of the organization, I feel like that's something that if the Buccaneers can get one or two or maybe three good screenplays in there, that's something the Saints will start to defend. And when that happens, other things can open up. Guys like OJ, guys like Mike Evans can take advantage of some of those adjustments the defense is going to be making. So it'll be really interesting, and I feel like that'll also open up some running space for Rojo to get some better yards on the ground. Obviously, Peyton got involved as well, especially after the fumble, so that's something cool as well. But I really feel like Ronald Jones, he's got kind of like a 2 or 3 game stretch here where he can really kind of solidify himself as kind of the future main back. I don't know if Bruce Arians or Byron Leftwich, Carmen, you probably comment on that a lot better than we could. Or I don't know if they're ever really interested in having kind of a solo back system, or if they would kind of prefer to have kind of a two-back system anyway. But I think Rojo can really solidify himself over the next couple of games if he has good performances, and so I look for him to have one here.
I like that.
All right. Well, since Carmen took mine and then David took my backup, I will go with Jameis Winston. And I think in order for the Bucs to really start to string together some wins here, some much needed wins, and to continue this streak of splitting the season series with New Orleans, Jameis has to be the Jameis that we saw early in the season. He can't be making mistakes. He can't play like he did against the Panthers or anything of the sort. And he played really well last week. He played really well the week before. I like to see that continue. I want to see him continue to trend up. And as he said regarding the Vernon Hargraves release, it's eye-opening. And, he knows that no job is safe. He's playing in the second half now of a contract year. He's got a ball out. And I think he's going to play virtually mistake-free and have a great game. And in order for Carmen's predictive offensive player of the game to have a great game, you need Jameis to have a great game. So that's who I'll go with basically by default.
It's not a bad choice.
Confident. That was confident. I will say that as far as like when you're talking about the screen game for Rojo, though, I think it was on ESPN, they did all of these basically like superlatives for different, not superlatives, but like they broke down like who the best receiver is by route. Mm-hmm. And the number one receiver in the NFL by route, by screen routes is Chris Godwin. And he has best nice. Average as far as, and like his catch percentage as it is crazy. Yeah, I think like 7 of 8 were the passes, like the screen passes that they measure for him. And he had like an average of 7.7 when he starts, an average of 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage on screen plays. So he's really getting like 9 mm-hmm. Or 9 or 10 yards per screen. So yeah, it was just, I thought that was interesting to see that Chris Godwin was the best player at screens. And so then I have to imagine like if you have to defend him in the screen game, if you've got Rojo up there too, like you can't get both. Yeah. So it opens up Rojo for that too. So we'll see.
Well, and OJ had that big, wasn't that big catch and run in London off of a screen as well?
I don't know if that was a screen or a drag.
Maybe it was just, maybe, yeah. I'm trying to remember it again.
Been a drag. Right. Because that's the thing, is like, OJ is such a big dude that like you just kind of have to hit him as he's going. Like, he's not gonna like cut and like do all that crazy stuff, because like he can, I think, but I think he's most effective when he's just like booking it. And like when he books it though, like he's way faster than you think, and way faster than anyone his size should be. So I think you just need to let him kind of go on like some of those drags and everything like that.
All right, well, how about we jump over to the defensive side of the ball. Shaq Barrett rule is still in effect. So Carmen, who is your do what?
That's not fair.
Sure it is.
Well, what's really not fair is that Evan picked Vita Vea yesterday, so I don't think we should be allowed to repeat on the Vita Vea pool either.
Nobody listens to Evan.
Ouch. Poor Evan.
No, not poor Evan. Evan will be fine. tell you what, David, you or I cannot pick him, but if Carmen wanted to pick Vita Vea, she is more than welcome to.
No, because if I was going to take him, I would have taken him on offense. Let's be serious. So.
Oh, nice. Good call. Well played.
He also is my offensive player of the game, too, to Vita. I do think that the offense is getting a little bit more creative, and it's kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, it's fun.
So they have been like bringing in like the extra tackle and like, you know, for the extra blocking and stuff. Like, I mean, I think that was also to compensate for like the injuries at tight end. But I was like, oh, that's fun. We're doing things. Anyway, am I going first with my defensive pick? Because I guarantee you, neither of you guys are going to pick who I'm going to pick, so I don't have to go first.
Oh no, please!
You know what? Let's put that to the test. Let's have Carmen go last. I want to test that theory.
Oh, all right,
do it.
Okay. Well then, okay. David, go ahead.
Oh, so I guess I'm up, right? I'm going. It's kind of weird. I'm going to go Sean Murphy Bunting, and so Sean actually kind of mentioned it earlier this week. Like, you know, again, going back to the Vernon Hargreaves, and that's going to be kind of the focal point. And in the game, if the secondary starts getting beat, the commentary is going to come up. People are going to write about it. People are going to talk about it. The absence of Vernon Hargreaves, and Sean is, you know, he's a rookie, obviously, but he's a second round draft pick. The first defensive back taken in a fairly defensive back heavy class. The guy who came into the preseason with a lot of hype, you know, which is unfair just by nature because the dude hasn't even put on pads yet. But he came in with a lot of hype, kind of fizzled out during the preseason, and then he's been building up and getting stronger and stronger and stronger. Size, he's got the requisite skills as an athlete to do the job. And I feel like we're going to see a lot of him on guys like Ted Ginn. We're going to see a lot of him against is it Tre'Quan Smith, right, for the Saints. He's going to have his opportunities against some guys that have some skill sets that they can do. They can do some damage. And we've seen the secondary not do so well against guys who have similar skill sets like Christian Kirk and like Tyler Lockett. Granted, not to that same level, but that they're facing this weekend. But if a guy like Sean Murphy Bunting can come in and have a strong showing against New Orleans Saints, win or lose, I think that fans can walk away. Even if you lose a close game, but the secondary really battles it out, the defense really battles it out, then Buccaneers fans can come away with a sense of strong future, because that's kind of been the narrative, is all these draft picks spent on the secondary, yet here we are still at the bottom of the league, so on and so forth. So I look to him as to be kind of one of those as well, you know, along with Jamel and what he's been doing, and then with Carlton coming back. But Sean Murphy Bunting's the guy I'm looking at the most to kind of try to tie up those loose ends there.
All right. Well, yeah.
Was that him, Carmen? Was that him?
That was not him.
Dang it.
Well, I'm not going to the well for this one. I'm just going to stick to my guns. It's Devin White. I'm taking Devin White. He's gotten better and better each week since returning from that knee injury. And just like against the Cardinals, you know, when we talked about him on that preview show, he's going to be key in helping shut down Alvin Kamara, both out of the backfield and as a receiver. So you need his speed, you need his versatility, and even Devin White has come out and said that he's not playing as well as he knows he can. So he's striving every week to reach that level that he knows that he can get to. We have not seen the best out of him yet. What better time to get the best out of him than in a must-win divisional game to really get this team back on track? Because I know it's crazy, and I know it's probably not going to happen, but playoffs are not out of the question.
Say
I mean,
it. louder for the people in the back.
I mean, to be fair, James, I said that yesterday with Evan as well.
I did not listen to that because I've been listening to Resistance Reborn on Audible.
But yes, I agree as well.
You know, you look at a Colts team that made the playoffs last year after starting off, what were they were like 3-6, 4-6. You know, it's not out of the realm of possibility. But if you're going to reach that level, you need Jameis playing flawless football and you need Devin White reaching his peak potential. So it's not over, and a divisional win can go a real long way. So yeah, I'm taking Devin White to really have a great game on Sunday. So Carmen, who is this mystery person that you believed that neither of us would take and believed that correctly?
Mike Edwards.
Mike Edwards.
Same. He's a little badger. He got his nickname, the Badger, from being a Kentucky and being a ball hawk. So we haven't seen that from him yet, but you've seen, obviously, Jamel Dean step up. We've seen Sean Murphy Bunting coming into his own. All of those guys, fun fact, have been in the lab with Coach Bowles this week and even week. So I love that it came out, you know, that Jamel was working with Coach Bowles, but like that's not anything new. Like in the mornings, especially, like if you walk past Bowles' office, like there's always someone in there trying to get better, and he's coaching them up. And Jameis said it actually this week, where he was like, I think that also speaks volumes of the coaches, you know, because that often goes like unnoticed, I think, a lot, because these guys put in a lot of time and a lot of effort, and especially to have like a defensive coordinator taking his time, you know, he's obviously worried about the overall game plan than anyone else is. And so like to take the time and to go over things like individually with his players, that's not like a blanket thing in the league. You know, that's not necessarily, I don't want to say it's not necessarily common, but it does say a lot about this coaching staff and how much they tailor the scheme to their players, how much they tailor the way they teach it to their players. It's a very individualized approach. So Edwards has been in there too, and I just think that like he's shown flashes of it in practice too, where he wants that ball and he wants to make a play on the ball and he wants to make a play on the quarterback. Like he wants to do it all because that's what he did in college. So nickel at Kentucky a lot. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him, you know, kind of figuring his way down and just, you know, with the ways that they're going to try to attack the Saints passing game. I want Mike Edwards to have a big game, so I'm speaking it into existence.
All right. Well, and with that, I'll pass it right back to you and ask you what your bold prediction for the game is.
Can my bold prediction be that interception?
Say it again. You broke up a little bit. I didn't hear what.
Oh, can I say that my bold prediction then is subsequently Mike Edwards getting a interception?
Absolutely.
Mike Edwards is going to get an interception. Again, speaking it into existence. I don't know if this is going to happen. I don't know, you know, what his role is going to be, but I feel it.
Well, I mean, this podcast knows a little something about speaking the absurd into existence because somebody on this very podcast last Friday said that Jamel Dean was going to get an interception.
Did they? So moving into my bold prediction for this Sunday. So my key defensive player is Sean Murphy Bunting. And I too, Carmen, am predicting my key player to come up with an interception, second career interception against the Saints again for the second time, except this time he's taking it to the house. It's going to be a pick six.
Oh, okay. I like that. Stepping it up.
So, James, go ahead and continue your bragging.
You already had the interception. Yeah, you got to one up it.
Exactly.
All right. Well, mine was actually along the same lines, and we're all sticking with our defensive, predictive defensive player of the game. I was going to say that Devin White gets his first career NFL touchdown. I don't care if it's on an interception. I don't care if Levante strips it and Devin scoops and scores.
Or just his 20th fumble.
Yeah. Devin White is getting in the end zone.
Okay. I like that.
I'll tell you, you know, there are some Saints fans out there saying that their offense was better with Teddy Bridgewater than with Drew Brees. If Drew Brees throws two interceptions and Devin White gets a fumble off of some play, we might start hearing Teddy Two Gloves chants in Superdome next week.
Yeah, that would be wild.
Think that they were like, I mean, the Saints are very unpredictable as it is just because of all the, like, how much they substitute, or I should say their offense is very unpredictable in how they substitute different players in, their different the packages that they use. Like, it's 11 personnel, but there's an extra tackle in there, or there's a quarterback in there, an extra quarterback in there. But it's all smoke and mirrors at the end of the day. But I do think, so, like, I think that with Teddy being more mobile, it actually did add another dimension, like another real dimension, I should say, like, to their offense, where it wasn't smoke and mirrors. Like, no, this quarterback really can take off on you. Rather than, you know, kind of trying to distract people with all of the moving parts when all Drew Brees is going to do is sit in the pocket and pass. So, I don't know. I think there's merit to that, but I don't know, two interceptions and, like, a defense, another, you know, takeaway worth of merit, but we'll see.
We shall see. And I mean, remember, Coach Bowles did say after London that it was harder to game plan against Kyle Allen than it was Cam Newton. I mean, if the Bucs can beat Drew Brees and the Saints, I wouldn't be surprised to hear Coach Bowles come out and say it was easier to scheme against Drew than it was against Teddy and really flame or fan those flames a little bit.
Yeah. Bowles is really tight with Sean Payton, though. And I think that he has a huge respect for the play caller that Sean Payton is. And that just doesn't change really with the quarterback. Which is kind of crazy, but he brought that up actually today. Like, they're game planning, obviously, for the whole offense, not just Drew Brees. And, you know, given Peyton's prowess in offensive play calling, no matter who's under center, and we saw it. I mean, it's not like the Saints offense suffered when Brees was out. So you have to attribute, I feel like, a lot of that to the play calling and everything like that, that Sean Payton does, and he's a constant. So we'll see.
At the end of a hard week, it's great to sit down, take some time off, and watch some football. Game-winning touchdowns on two-minute drives, running backs racing down the sidelines with no one to stop them. There's nothing else like the NFL, and there's no better way to make the games even more exciting than to bet on them. So do the smart thing and go to mybookie.ag. No one gives you more ways to win than they do. MyBookie's got the fastest payouts and better lines than any other sportsbook. Don't forget, where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on, and mybookie.ag is the best in the business. If you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you'll multiply your winnings. And no matter how you bet, the NFL season is the best time of year. Join now and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code LOCKEDON to activate this offer. That's promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid.
Did anyone happen to notice if Sean Payton and Dirk Cutter shook hands after last week's game or not?
I don't know. No one talked about it.
I think Dirk calls plays for Atlanta in the booth.
Is he up in the booth?
Yeah, I think offensively. Yeah, I don't know if he's in the booth or not, but he's like the offensive play caller because obviously Dan Quinn's a defensive guy, so I don't know.
I think I remember seeing a game that the Falcons were playing, and it obviously could have just been that game, but I want to say they showed Dirk on the camera and he was in the booth.
Okay. Well, I would be willing to bet money that Dirk Cutter is not getting an invitation to Sean Payton's upcoming wedding. But anyway, moving on to score predictions. Now, of course, I made my score prediction on the Crossover Wednesday episode with Locked On Saints host Ross Jackson. That was an absolute blast of an episode. If you have not listened to that, go back and do so. Ross knows the Saints, and we had a ball making fun of the NFL and officiating and the New England Patriots division. And it was a fun show. So I predicted that the splits continue and the Bucks take this one 38-34. So, wow. Carmen, what is your final score prediction?
Yeah, I'm going to go less than that. I don't really think it's going to be a shootout. I'm going to go... I never think about this in advance. I totally should. let's go Bucks 27, Saints 24.
Okay.
I'm going to basically do like this week kind of with like for what happened with Arizona, but knocked down a little bit.
All righty. And David?
So I'm going to do way too much math to draw conclusions, which is ironic given how my evening has gone. So we already talked earlier today that the New Orleans Saints have scored less than 15 points four times this season, and they're 2-2 in those games. However, they've also scored more than 31 points, so 31 points or more, four times this season. Three of those games have come off of the back of those games where they scored less than 15. Obviously, this is the fourth game coming off of scoring less than 15. So I think the Saints are going to continue that trend as well. And so I have them scoring 33. James, the same stat that you just gave out, I'm pretty certain you probably wrote that in your game prediction on BucksNation.com because I use the same stat. So that'll be fun. But I think so split continues, which means if the Saints are scoring 33, the Buccaneers are scoring at least 34. So my score prediction is going to be 34-33 Tampa Bay.
All right.
I like it.
All right.
Well, Carmen, what do we have on tap over at Buccaneers.com?
Well, I wanted to actually, can I suggest like a quick little diversion of a topic?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I just saw David a couple of days ago, and it was at the Team Godwin Foundation launch.
Were we at the Team Godwin Foundation launch, Carmen?
Yeah.
We were there. There were some people that weren't there, though.
I know this kind of leaves James out, but I just wanted to see what David's reaction to it was and how, if he had fun.
Oh, he had a great time.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. It was even better. I mean, go ahead, James.
He was sending me pictures of what a great time he was having while I was at home fighting with my computer, trying to do a podcast by myself, and finally gave up because my microphone wouldn't work after 2.5 hours.
So I brought up a poor subject.
No, it's fine because I'm going to remind David of this when I ditch him for an entire weekend to podcast by himself. So it's all good.
There you go.
That's a give or take. I may or may not have messaged James at one point during the evening and said that, by the way, 5-star food tastes even better when it's free. I might have sent that message. I'm not sure.
It was very good.
The dessert was on point. Everything was good. I got to share a drink with Bailey Adams for the first time since we've known each other working. I mean, back to the Pewter Planket fan sided. So, I mean, it's been a long time coming. So that was great. But even better, I mean, seeing the turnout, you know what I mean? Like it was great to see Chris and Mariah. I mean, because they were genuinely surprised about the amount of people that showed up. So it's great to see that they know they have a support structure. There are so many Bucks players. You know, Carmen, you chronicled it. Casey did a really good job. The website obviously covered it. So many of his teammates showed up. But then just the other people from the community, other people that are involved with what's going on showed up. And you can see just the genuine happiness on their face with how many people were out there. And then getting to talk to a couple of teammates about what they think of Chris and the cause and everything. I talked to Scotty on the side there for a minute after they were done getting the the drawing done of them. And
caricature.
There you go. Character. And he kind of gave me some insight, you know, into what it's like to be in that locker room with those guys and then the role models that they are and kind of how he hopes to follow in their footsteps someday and learned that he's engaged to be married to his, obviously, his fiance. And, you know, great news to receive from my end and get a chance to congratulate them in person. And then just kind of seeing the impact that they can all make on the whole situation. The last and they went great. It was an overall great experience. And I'm not going to lie, Carmen, Bailey and I leading up to the event, we kind of talked to you about this a little bit. Like, we never covered an event like that before. We covered practices. I've been to a pro day. We went to the combine. You know what I mean? Games. Like, we've done those. And in those things, it's almost easier because, you know, they put you, like, you have a pass, it tells you where to go, you have an assigned seat, it tells you where to sit, you look, you write, you comment, and people follow you on Twitter, and it's a fun time, everybody goes home healthy and happy. But there, Bailey and I, like, I will honestly say this, I've never been around that much money in my life, and so, I told Bailey at one point, I was like, I really hope I don't knock something over. And as I'm saying that, I look over and Brian Mitchell is knocking something over. And I'm like, you know what? At least he's knocking it over because he can pay for it if he breaks it. I can't afford that. But yeah, it was overall just a great experience. And then, you know, once we got into the groove of things, Chris Horan from Athletes and Causes was great. And we literally just kind of sat him down. I asked you, Carmen, for advice. You gave us some great advice. And I sat down with Chris and like, look, dude, like, give me my left and right limits. What can I do? What can I do? How do you want me to do this? You know, because he's the one who invited us out and everything. So I want to make sure that I understand what we're there for. And he gave us some very clear kind of like, you know, here's where like you do, you know, the red ropes and stuff. Don't go behind there unless you work for the team, which I saw you rubbing in my face. And no, I just saw you back there and I got really jealous. So
that was the only place to like sit down. Otherwise I was gonna have to like stand up and eat. So I just like squeezed in, I think, with Tanner and Cam. I was like, Tanner, leave.
It really was. And Bailey actually at one point, he was like, where are we going to eat? And I was like, honestly, dude, we're going to do this European style. We're just going to walk up to a table and say, hey, mind if we stand here? And that's exactly what we did. And, you know, we ate our dinner or whatever.
But
at the same time, getting to see other media members, you know, Scott Reynolds was out there, Greg Ahn, Mark Cook, they were all out there and kind of getting them to see them. And, you know, it's still a professional environment, but a little bit of a more relaxed environment. They had their wives out there and stuff hanging out. So just overall a great experience. Great for the cause, great for the experience, great for to talk to the teammates about something other than football, and great to see how the community came out and really supported. There were fans outside the restaurant hoping to get autographs, which was really awkward, but also fun at the same time. So, yeah, just an overall great experience, and couldn't have timed my trip to Tampa better.
Good. Well, I'm so glad that you had a good time, and I'm sorry. Yeah, I wasn't – I don't think I really gave you good advice, so thank you for saying that, but I think you've been polite.
No, you did, especially because I was sitting there with Mike I was sitting there with Mike Evans and talking to him, and believe me, your words were kind of echoing through the back of my head. And, he was really great about it and gave me a lot of good insight into, you know, foundations and organizations and what it means to them. Because I feel like a lot, and I hope anyway, what I wrote for Bucks Nation, I know Bailey also wrote something for Bucks Nation about it. And I sent it to Chris. I sent it to Kaveh, Chris's agent. And they really loved it. They really appreciated it and felt like it brought kind of like a human angle to the whole thing. Because I think a lot of people kind of get this it's almost like there's so many players with so many foundations and causes that's almost like, well, of course you're going to have a foundation. Why wouldn't you have a foundation? But Chris even said when I talked to him that when he came to the NFL, like he knew he wanted to have a cause. He knew he wanted to have a foundation, but he didn't want to just make a foundation to have a foundation to say, hey, look, everybody, here's my foundation. So it took him and Mariah a little bit. And what it actually was is they adopted a shelter dog and kind of going through the experiences with her of, you know, kind of her struggles to realize that she was home, you know, like this was a place she could get comfortable, that she wasn't going back to her, you know, 4x4 cubicle or whatever she came from. And, you know, that she kind of slowly became part of the family and then see her blossom and have a personality and everything else. And now she's a daddy's girl, you know, and everything else. That's really what kind of drew them to that cause and really kind of drew them to what they're working with now and everything that they're doing. So to get to hear and go through kind of the progress of where they were to where they got to, how much it means to him, how much it means to Mariah. And then, I mean, again, just seeing their reaction and their own interactions with people at their launch event, like the work and the time it took to get to that point, it's a success by itself. And then now that they start the fundraising, they start the events moving forward, now they're going to go out and do even more. So it was just a cool experience to be around.
Yeah. I'm good. I'm so glad you had a lot of fun. That was a really, really good event. I really appreciated it. And I know I asked Chris how much they raised and he didn't have an exact number, but he said that when he left, they were somewhere in the vicinity of like 90,000.
So nice.
Very nice.
I was like, Mike wouldn't even let him talk about it, but apparently Mike made a really big donation.
Nice.
And I don't know how much it was for, but because like Chris kept trying to like say, well, because of this guy, and Mike kept kind of like, nah. So well, Mike is really good about that, though.
Yeah, and Mike kind of owes it to him because he showed up to Chris's event, you know, dressed better than he did.
Mike, they both words, look very sharp. I will say that our guys can clean up pretty darn well. And for like someone who sees them mostly in like sweaty, like sweats and everything all the time. To see them like all dressed up like that, you're like, oh, you are a presentable human.
Yeah. Then James will love, you know, I got to talk with Boston Red Sox great Johnny Damon there for a little while, so James will be not at all jealous about that.
Well, see, and it's funny, I talked to Mark Cook about that on Twitter. Yeah. And I said, you know, it would have been really awkward for me to be there and speak with Johnny Damon because I would have shaken his hand. I would have introduced myself and I would have said, oh, by the way, you owe me $150 because I bought your jersey at the All-Star break of 2005. And 6 months later, you signed with the damn Yankees. Hey,
you know, he probably would have pointed to the free food and everything and said, yeah, we're square. You're good.
Probably. No, I would have shaken his hand, thanked him for 2004, and then thanked him for not winning with the Yankees. Actually, I think he did win a World Series with the Yankees, now that I think about it.
I don't know.
Yikes.
Yeah, probably. He was a cool dude.
And Carmen, I didn't know his story.
He seemed pretty cool.
So to hear Johnny tell his story, like, I didn't know his backstory and kind of everything that he does. So, I mean, that was cool too, to learn that, you know, his history and everything. That was pretty legit.
Yeah, I didn't know much of that at all either. But I did, when I was talking to Chris at the event briefly, he said that he thought it was really cool, like, being, you know, kind of doing that with him, because it brings in, you know, a whole different, like, crowd, and it brings in, like, a bunch of different people together that maybe wouldn't normally, you know, be at those things together. So he thought it was, like, he's like, you know, I think it's dope. Like, you know, we've got all different types of people, a whole different kind of crowd, you know, coming in, and especially, like, from his standpoint of trying to, you know, like, launch a foundation and get their brand awareness there and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, he's working on establishing himself in Tampa, and he's doing a really good job on the field. But this is just, like, a big step for them, too, to establish themselves in Tampa as a community, too, which was great.
Right. And one last thing I'll throw out there, because we do have some listeners that are military members and vets and stuff. So I think, James, we talked about this. Carmen, I know I talked to you about it at the event, but military challenge coins. I have a coin. I had a coin with me, so I'm a military working dog handler, so canines hold a special place in my heart. And, you know, obviously that coincides with what Chris and Mariah are doing. So I got a coin from my commander here from our, you know, military working dog unit, and was able to present that to Chris and Mariah at the event.
Aww.
So that was kind of a cool thing to be able to do, to kind of show them that appreciation, because, you know, I think it's fairly unique. I had to kind of explain to Mariah what a challenge coin was, and she seemed genuinely happy about receiving it. So that was a cool moment for me just personally.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I'm sure, you know, they're both very, very genuine people. So I'm sure they appreciated it very much.
All right. Well, now that I'm thoroughly depressed.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. I was over the moon excited for David and Bailey to be able to go and participate in that. And you know, I may give David a hard time for going and doing that without me, but, you know, I could have been there if I had decided to make the trip and David just happened to pick the right game to go to, and it worked out great. So no, I was excited for him. I am also, reminding my son daily that the game that I was supposed to go to cover next month, I can no longer do so because I have to drive him 2 hours away for a hockey game. Mm-hmm. So yeah, not too happy with him about that, but that's okay.
It's a sacrifice. Do you want some good news, James? Carmen, do you want to deliver some good news to James while we're on the air?
Sure. Go ahead.
Do you want some good news, James?
Sure. What's the good news?
My mission to Louisiana got canceled, so I will actually be here all of next week.
Woohoo! That is good news. I'm very relieved. You want to know some other good news?
I think Carmen's just waiting for us.
Probably. By the time people are hearing this, episode 2 of The Mandalorian will already be out.
Oh, boy. Okay. And they're out.
But Carmen, I got David to start watching Star Wars. I'm very proud of myself.
Yeah, you did.
I'm proud of you too. I guess I need to get Disney Plus.
Oh my god, you might need to get Disney.
It's pretty legit. I'm happy with it.
I heard that it's been crashing though, so I'm like waiting for it to, like, you know, level out.
It had its first day problems, and I had tweeted that out. I was like, you know, if Disney Plus was smart, they would have made this app available and allowed people to log in a few days ahead of time. And, you know, you can just do the running countdown clock. That's fine. But so many people trying to download it and log in all at the same time. Yeah, yeah. It was going to crash. But yeah, by the time I got home from work on Tuesday at about 1:15, I had no problems downloading it, logging in, and immediately streaming. Like, no issues at all.
Yeah, I haven't had many issues. And I also bundled, I did the bundle with Hulu and ESPN Plus. I've watched so many episodes of Details by Peyton Manning that I'm pretty sure I could be an NFL quarterback coach now.
That's definitely how that works.
Yeah, 100% yeah,
how that works.
Definitely. I'm going to call BA and see if he needs help.
Yeah.
Well, Carmen, we won't chew up any more of your time, but thank you so much for joining us. Always appreciate having you on, especially on these game preview episodes.
Yeah, I love being on. I really do.
All right. And of course, you can check out everything Carmen is doing over at Buccaneers.com. Follow her on Twitter and on Instagram at Carmen V, C-A-R-M-I-E letter V. Guys, follow her on Instagram.
Instagram. I need 1,000 followers so I can get the swipe up, so I can get verified, so I can get the swipe up feature.
Yep.
I need the swipe up feature for my articles. That's
we
got
to help her out.
You got to help me out. This is a shameless plug. Totally shameless, but I'm at like 900, like something at like 913 or something like that. So I'm like, I'm so close, guys. I need to see more so I can get my swipe up feature.
We will definitely see what we can do to help out with that.
Wow, James! What the hell?
I don't ever get on Instagram, and I realize that I probably wasn't following you.
Wow.
I just got the notification that James Yarko followed you on Instagram.
Wow.
Wow. You've been plugging me for how many weeks? How many appearances I've had on your podcast, and you plugged my Instagram, and you weren't even following me.
Wow.
If it makes you feel any better that plugging your Instagram on this episode caused me to get on Instagram for the first time in probably 3 months.
He probably doesn't follow me on Instagram either.
I tried not to, but I think it was unavoidable. I don't remember how that worked out.
You're going to have to.
Although I don't think Carmen follows me on Instagram either, so I think we're okay now, actually.
What?
I don't think you follow me on Instagram, so I think we're even.
I do. I
wouldn't. It's really just all I do is plug Bucks Nation stuff. You don't want to.
Yeah, I saw. Yeah.
Yeah, I have.
It says never mind. It says follow back. I thought I did. Well, all right. I'll follow you back. I'm not following James back though. Like right now, he's in a little bit of a timeout.
That's
it's
fine.
That long. I'm gonna. You know.
This will tell you. My last Instagram post was February 9th.
It's a long time.
Okay, but like. Still, I'm not taking any excuses, and I'm going to take a while to follow you back. I'm just saying.
You know what? That's I understand.
I'm petty like that.
Put him on the accountability sheet. That's reasonable.
I completely understand.
Okay, great.
But I don't use that as a form of social media, so I never think about it. But yeah, you could friend me on Facebook, and I would see everything that you do. Yeah,
I just have a page on Facebook. I just have like my page now. I don't think you can like follow on a page. I don't think you can follow like people unless they have a page. Like you can't like friend a page. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't even know if you can follow another page from your page account. I'm not sure how that works.
I know I can follow. Like I follow the Bucks.
Okay.
And like a public pages, and like Casey has one too. So like I follow her, and so does Scott. Scott never uses his, but I follow like the Bucks, Scott, Casey. I think like James's foundation, like some of the guys' foundations and stuff like that. But it's all public pages. Like it's not like an individual person. So if I would, I could, but I can't. So I won't.
All right. Well, again, make sure you're following Carmen on Twitter and Instagram. At Carmi V, C-A-R-M-I-E letter V. Check out everything David and I are doing over at BucksNation.com. Make sure you're sending us your post-game voicemail reactions to 813-444-5841 and follow along on Twitter at LockedOnBucks, at JArco_Bucks, at DH82_Bucks, and at Bucks_Nation. Hope you all have an absolutely outstanding weekend, and we thank you so much for joining us right here at Locked On Bucks. Too many men, too many people.